Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. But we do help focus you on the events of the week. Through the lens of original thought, I'm glad. We're all glad. We're just so glad to have you. I'm glad to be joined in the studio today by my extremely attractive audio engineer, as always, here to bump you through another chaotic week as we, well, document the decline and fall of Western civilization. Not to put too fine a point on it, but that's pretty much what we do here. Although we do our part to prop it up, and we hope that you'll join us indeed. So where to start this week? Where to start? Do you want to start with the universe? We can go immediately into the science. Really? File. As we examine, we've got a report here from the Independent in London. The universe should not exist, according to scientists. Scientists, I said. As a matter of fact, scientists is what they call themselves. The most elite scientists in the world, the Independent reports, are struggling to figure out exactly why our universe didn't destroy itself as soon as it came into existence. Yeah, that's what science says should have happened, according to the Independent. But it clearly hasn't. The author writes, it clearly hasn't since you're reading this, as far as we know. So they don't even know if they exist. They don't even know if this article exists. They don't even know if I'm reading it. But they assume that perhaps I am, as far as they know. Well, they say at the beginning of... Now, by the way, this goes back to the whole Big Bang theory. Well, I guess we'll get to that. At the beginning of the universe, according to the standard model. The standard model. That's the Big Bang. Just in case you were wondering, they call that the standard model. They say, according to the Big Bang, there are equal amounts of matter and antimatter. The trouble with that is that they would have each annihilated each other, leaving none of the matter that surrounds us today, as far as we know. So, well, they've done experiments in the particle accelerators there, and when matter is created from energy, there's an equal amount of matter and antimatter, and they annihilate each other, and you end up with a stain, just a remnant. So how is it that the Big Bang didn't result in a universe that doesn't exist? Well, researchers have been looking for some difference between matter and antimatter that could explain why the universe exists, but they have found no such difference. Yes. I have a quote here from an esteemed scientist. His name is Christian Smora. He's the author of a new study that was conducted at the CERN Particle Accelerator. And he says the universe should not actually exist, he says. He says an asymmetry must exist here somewhere, but we simply do not understand. We don't get it. So they're looking for all these reasons how it could be that their model, it refutes itself on its face, yet here we are, here I am, sitting here reading this article, and you are listening to me, as far as I know. Actually, I know. I know I exist. I know you exist. You know you exist, I hope. Hopefully you haven't fallen in to the trap that the scientists have fallen into, and you're not even sure if you exist. So I'll post a link to the article. Never is it posited in this article that the, quote, standard model, unquote, is fatally flawed. They never posit that possibility that maybe this didn't all occur as the result of a big bang. Well, at least that's not posited in this article, and it hasn't been yet. But the day is coming when the Big Bang will be abandoned and tossed upon the ash heap of history, as they say. That day is rapidly approaching as science, real science, refutes the fact that there was ever a Big Bang. Listen to this. Listen, the article concludes that scientists are looking at other possibilities. Not the possibility that the Big Bang theory is ludicrous. No, they're not looking at that at all. They're looking at other possibilities, including that antimatter has upside-down gravity, meaning that it would, in effect, fall upwards. That's according to people who call themselves scientists, if you can believe that, yes. I think it would be more logical to reevaluate the standard model than start thinking about crackpot ideas like upside-down gravity and that things would fall upwards. That was actually reported in Cosmos magazine. The possibility that antimatter has anti-gravity, and if you dropped it, it would fall up toward the sky. You know what's going to be blown sky high is the Big Bang theory in general. But we'll hang around and we'll be here to pick up the pieces or to catch them from the sky. We'll all have nets to catch the pieces of the Big Bang theory as it crumbles and falls or explodes or implodes or whatever's going to happen to it. It's not going to be around very much longer. And that's when the scientists will turn, of course, to aliens. Get ready for that. The aliens, yes. All right. All right, enough with the reverb, okay? Get your hand off that button. All right. Now, we had four American troops killed in Niger, and there's been some difficulty in understanding exactly why our troops are in Niger and why were they killed and how did it happen? Were they fragged by their supposed allies? And I don't know all the details. I just know that I'm not comfortable with a small force of American special forces there in Niger. That's the only thing I'm sure of. I'm happy that we're fighting terrorists there. I'm happy that we're fighting terrorists anywhere. But I'm not comfortable with tiny, small bands of troops being thrown up against these fanatical Islamists in Niger or anywhere else. But what I'm most uncomfortable with is the pronunciation of Niger. When did the pronunciation of Niger become Niger? Niger. Have you noticed this? I just noticed it. I've done a little research. Other people have noticed that this has been happening for quite some time. And I'm convinced, I mostly hear it on CNN, Niger. Niger. Now, I always thought it was Niger. And if you look in the encyclopedia, Niger is a perfectly acceptable pronunciation of the country and the river for which it's named, the Niger River. But those are American pronunciations. And CNN and the other leftist, liberal, America-hating scum, they can't bear the fact that there would be an American pronunciation of anything. And so they revert to what in their mind they think would most please the locals, which turns out to be a pronunciation that acknowledges the French colonization of Niger, because Niger is a French pronunciation. And when CNN realizes that they're giving a hat tip to the colonialists, their heads are going to explode. They won't know how to pronounce the name of the country. They certainly can't use the politically incorrect traditional American pronunciation of Niger. But Niger, well, they don't like colonialism. So, yeah, they're headed for a crack-up over at CNN. And all of the other news organizations have adopted this pronunciation, acknowledging the French colonization of the poor indigenous peoples there along the Niger River. We have not, by the way, here at the Weekly Worldview, We have not investigated the troop deaths, but our hearts go out to their families, and we're glad that they were fighting for America despite the fact that their government apparently abandoned them there. A tiny group of special forces who end up, well, depending on what you read, they were either ambushed or they took off and chased an unauthorized engagement against some terrorists. We don't really know what happened there, and we don't even know how to pronounce Niger anymore. So there you have that. So let's move on from Niger. We're going to pronounce it Niger here at the Weekly Worldview, just because that's always how I've pronounced it. Not that I've pronounced it all that often, but I'm sure we'll be talking about it more in the near future. So we will come out of the science, really, file, and we'll go to an actual scientist, Albert Einstein. He was an actual real scientist who knew he existed, by the way. In fact, he was so certain that he existed that he wrote a note at the Hotel Tokyo to someone who carried his luggage up or something like that. Apparently in Japan, and this is in the 1920s, it was not customary to tip the hotel staff. And so Albert penned a note to the, what's it called? The guy who carries your bag up to your room. They don't have those anymore, hardly. So I don't even remember what they're called.
Bellboy.
The bellboy. Yes, the bellhop. Thank you very much. They have bellhops in Japan?
I never stayed in a hotel.
Never stayed in a hotel in Japan, right, because you had a house there. I stayed in a hotel room that was approximately the size of a shower stall one time in Japan. There was no bellhop. Yeah, it was unbelievable. You had to fold the bed down out of the door. I thought I was aboard a ship. But I was at a hotel there. I didn't have to tip anybody. And apparently Albert Einstein didn't tip this bellhop. Instead, he wrote him a note. And the note, it read as follows. Now, it was written in German, so we don't even know if German exists, but we're going to assume that it does. And Albert wrote, quote, "A quiet and modest life brings more joy than a pursuit of success bound with constant unrest." So it sounds like he was a little stressed out. And so he wrote this note on modest living and gave it to the bellhop, and it found its way into an auction this past week. The note went up for auction with a pre-auction estimate of $5,000 to $8,000 for a handwritten note from Albert Einstein. That seems reasonable. You'd think that a handwritten note from Albert Einstein on modest living could bring $5,000, maybe even $10,000 at auction. Well, it sold for $1.56 million at an auction in Jerusalem. It was purchased by a European who prefers to go unnamed for $1.56 million. Now, that's ironic. It's a note on modest living. Somebody blows $1.5 million on it. And that's really all I had to say about that. It was just ironic, I thought, and which is probably why it made the news, since it's not really an earth-shattering story, but... How come the socialists are not mad? Yeah, well, they ought to be, because that 1.56 million, how many abortions could have we provided to third world dreamers? Speaking of that, let's go here to the personhood file, where WorldNet Daily reports that the American Civil Liberties Union last Wednesday confirmed that an illegal alien teenager who was being cared for in a shelter in Texas procured the taxpayer-funded elective abortion that she was demanding. She demanded an abortion. And the state of Texas, who was, they were housing her, they said you can't get an abortion because the state doesn't pay for abortions. And so ACLU lawyers and a similarly minded judge said that Texas has to give her an abortion. And the ACLU couldn't get the girl to an abortion clinic fast enough. They authorized the abortion. The abortion was authorized by six judges on the D.C. Circuit Court. And before the ink was dry on their decision, they took the illegal alien girl down and murdered her child. What does the illegal alien have to say? Well, she doesn't speak English, but somebody translated it. Here's what she said about killing her baby, or I should say, arranging for the state of Texas and the justice system there to murder her child. She said, quote, "This is my life, my decision. I want a better future. I want justice." And then she killed her child along with the state of Texas and the entire judiciary, the D.C. Circuit Court, and the governor of Texas, who could have stepped in by force of arms and prevented it, but he did not because he's a coward. The article goes on from WorldNet Daily, and you've got all the platitudes from the pro-life industry about how outraged and horrified they are that taxpayer funds were used to pay for the abortion of an illegal alien. Nowhere does, let's see, we've got the quotes from the Susan B. Anthony list, American, the National Right to Life Committee, the Texas Department of Health and Human Services, blah, blah, blah. All these pro-life organizations who have been supporting the 20-week, have you heard of the Pain-Capable Child Protection Act or some such thing? Basically saying if the child is under 20 weeks old, the pro-lifers will authorize the killing, and then they'll still send out fundraising letters claiming that they're pro-life, basically is what. The baby, this particular baby, was under 20 weeks old, so I'm not sure why the pro-life industry is squawking about it. Now, me personally, and my circle of influence, including the folks at American Right to Life, we posit the idea that no innocent child should be murdered, no matter how young and defenseless they are. And so we have a right to stand up and be outraged about the fact that this innocent child was murdered at the hands of the ACLU and these judges. Welcome back. Yes, indeed. That hammer is coming down on all of you who don't understand and will not just humble yourselves and admit the simple fact that every human being is a person and has a right to life. That's all. And so we'll be around to pick up the pieces on that one, too. And that one's going to be ugly, let me tell you what. That one's going to be ugly. All right. Let's move. We're going back now into the science. Really? File. Are you sure? Are you saying that's science? Really? Yes, we have a dinosaur mummy. A dinosaur mummy, I said. That's right. This is from NTD.TV. All right. It's obviously a reputable news source. At least as reputable as CNN with the Niger and all of that. What we have here is the Royal Tyrrell Museum of Paleontology in Alberta, Canada, recently unveiled a new dinosaur exhibit. And what's interesting about it is it's not just a skeleton. It's a mostly intact dinosaur, the skin, everything. It looks really cool. Since it was unearthed, it's actually kept its shape. They say the bones aren't visible because of the skin and the flesh and all of that. and even some of its innards are still intact. Researchers are amazed at the extent of the almost unparalleled degree of preservation in this particular fossil. Now, the whole thing is fossilized, as far as we know. Well, except for the soft tissue, which they haven't looked for yet. But if they do, they'll find some. They'll find, like, kidney tissue. They'll find osteocytes and blood cells. Maybe a little bit of collagen. If they care to look, they'll find all that stuff. But this is a fossilized dinosaur. But it doesn't just look like bones. It's got the skin on it, which is pretty wild. They say that it looks as if it might have been walking around just a couple of years ago. That's a couple of weeks ago, according to Jakob Wittner, a paleontologist. Oh, I'm sorry, a paleobiologist from the University of Bristol, who was asked about this dinosaur mummy. This mummy dinosaur was discovered in 2011. And the scientist there at the Royal Tyrrell Museum of Paleontology and the authors here at NTD.TV, they say, quote, 100 million years ago, when this ancient prehistoric creature roamed the earth, it was a member of a genus named the Nodosaur. Now, and it originally weighed 3,000 pounds. It was a fairly large creature. The mummified Nodosaur that's on display at the Royal Tyrrell Museum currently weighs 2,500 pounds. So it didn't even lose a lot of weight going through the whole mineralization process there as it fossilized. NTD says that the question of how the dinosaur could have remained so intact still baffles scientists. They're baffled. Yes, they're baffled as to how this could have happened. But they've put forth a theory. Yes. They put forth the theory that the creature may have been carried away to sea by a flooded river where it sank to the bottom. Now, that I agree with. That I could buy. Yes, it appears that it could have been washed down a flooded river during a flood event of some sort. But here's where they lose me. They say that the Nodosaur lay there on the bottom of the sea undisturbed, and the armor and skin were replaced by minerals over the course of millions of years. So does anybody else have a hard time buying that one? If you're not suspicious, then you may not know that you exist. Or perhaps you're unsure about the existence of anything, and the Nodosaur included. Because nothing lays at the bottom of the sea for millions of years and keeps its skin on. In fact, nothing lays under the bottom of the sea for a year and keeps its skin on and its flesh intact. But they say that's the best they can figure out, that it laid there on the bottom of the sea for millions of years. And for whatever reason, it didn't rot, and nor was it eaten by other sea creatures. Just this one. It was, you might call it a singularity, because it's almost impossible to believe that that could have happened. Now, I have a theory that I could put forth a theory. My theory starts with the creature may have been carried away to sea by a flooded river where it sank. I'll go with them on that. But after that, it was rapidly mineralized in a catastrophic event. Let's just leave it at that. Now, I'm not a scientist, okay? I don't claim to be a scientist. But the only way this thing could have been mineralized with its skin still on would be if it happened rapidly in some sort of catastrophic event. That's the only thing I can figure out. And it had to happen rapidly. That's all, okay? So would you go with me on that, or is that too far out? Because the millions of years at the bottom of the sea, that's just not possible. I'm sorry. That's about as likely as the Big Bang. And the upside-down gravity and the falling upwards, yeah, all of that stuff. The article concludes with the obligatory mention of millions and millions of years. They say visitors will be able to vividly visualize the lives and times of dinosaurs so many millions and millions and millions of years ago. So, all right, so there you have that, the dinosaur. Dinosaurs are really cool. By the way, when all of you big bangers out there, and you atheists, and you heathens, and you just the unwashed masses there, pawning yourself off as some sort of scientists, we will be there to pick up the pieces when you lose the dinosaurs, because you're going to lose the dinosaurs. And when you lose the dinosaurs, we will be there to help the children understand what actually happened. And you may not thank us initially because it's going to be fairly painful and embarrassing for you. But eventually you'll be thankful, you know, one way or another. You will either get down on your knees and say thank you, or the living God will force you down on your knees and then rub your noses in it. But either way, you're going to say it. You're going to admit it. I can't wait. I can't wait to watch Bill Nye get down on one knee. That's going to be something to watch. Now, I'm supposed to hope that he does it because of genuine repentance, and I would be happy with that. I'd be happy with that. But I'm also, I guess I'm not supposed to say I'll be happy to watch. At least right now, I think I would be happy to watch God rub his face in the dirt. But maybe at that time, I won't be happy. Maybe I'll be sad that Bill Nye is on his way to eternal damnation and hellfire, and I'll feel bad about it. I hope so. It'd make me a better person if I felt bad about it. But at the moment, I don't feel bad, but I know that God will help me with that. Okay, now, let us move on into the war file. As the war against Christianity continues in the Middle East, Breitbart reports that Christians living in the Nineveh Plains, who only just returned home after the defeat of the Islamic State, are once again being displaced, forced to flee as the Kurds clash with the Iraqi government forces north of Mosul. We reported on this last week, that the Iraqis are hell-bent against giving the Kurds the land that they fought and died for fair and square. And so the Iraqis, which really means the Iranians, are going to fight the Kurds again. And who gets caught in the middle? Innocent civilians, a lot of them Christians. They've been fleeing from one place to the other for the last several years, and now that's going to continue because America just won't stand up and tell the Iraqis that, hey, if it wasn't for us, you'd all be dead, so give the Kurds some space and let's stop the fighting. I think the Kurds are at least tolerant somewhat of the Christians in their midst, unlike the other branches of the Muslim fighters. Anyway, Christian families have been evacuated from Telescof after the Kurdish Peshmerga forces began exchanging fire with the Iraqi troops. And it's going to be yet another long, cold winter for them because they've been abandoned by, well, everyone, apparently. But I think the Kurds are pretty much used to that. And now we, the American government, is basically administering the annihilation of Christianity in Iraq. That's what we're doing. And we're doing it now through inaction. We've been doing it for the past, since 1991. We've been doing it through action. Now we're doing it through inaction. The Christian population of Iraq is down to about 200,000. From the 1.5 million who lived there before the fall of Saddam Hussein, circa 2004. It's just awful what they're forced to be put through over there. And our hearts go out to the Christians in the Middle East. And heaven knows we need a leader here in America who would actually stand up and do what's right to save the civilians and the Christians who didn't really want any part in the war. But for whatever reason, we can't seem to just let the Kurds have a little piece of land. I mean, we'll bend over backwards to give the Palestinians something that they never even had. The Kurds have been there for 3,000 years. Anyway, but let's go on. Further, deeper into the war file, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis peered into North Korea from a lookout post this past Friday, flanked by the South Korean Defense Minister, Sung Yoon Moo. He suggested that the U.S. and South Korean missile defenses simply could not stop all of the conventional artillery that the North Koreans have massed along the border. And Mattis emphasized the fact that we are hopeful for a peaceful resolution of the burgeoning crisis in North Korea. Reuters reports that North Korea's conventional weaponry poses such a risk to South Korea that any attempt to denuclearize the North by force could easily escalate into a devastating conflict. Well, it's hard to argue with that. There's no easy answers in North Korea. Although I would think the tactical nuclear weapons on the artillery sites could be viable, but then you got the fallout. It's just horrible and ugly what could happen in North Korea. And it's a shame that we in the West have squandered all of our political and moral capital to the point where we're actually having to dance with a madman around the idea of the annihilation of hundreds of thousands, maybe a million people. We're back, and we move from one crisis, the existential crisis of North Korean nuclear weapons development, to the crisis du jour. Donald Trump last week declared the opioid crisis a public health emergency. Indeed, we read Breitbart reports that President Donald Trump declared the opioid crisis a public health emergency last week. Didn't I just say that? Why am I reading that if I just said that? I don't know. I'm a creature of habit. The declaration will allow government agencies to provide immediate assistance to communities struggling with opioid addiction. What is that? What does that mean? That means they're going to dole out human services to all the junkies. The help that the junkies need that their families will no longer provide, because the junkies have robbed their families and alienated their families because they're junkies. I know I'm supposed to feel sorry for them. I heard it said on the radio this past week that the opioid crisis is the AIDS epidemic of our time. Yeah. Yes, the AIDS epidemic of our time. Does that mean that within a few years that heroin addicts and other junkies are going to be elevated to the level of HIV-positive homosexuals, and we're all going to have to practically worship them? Is opium going to receive its own civil rights, like the human immunodeficiency virus did in the late 1980s and early 90s? Is that what's going to happen? Now we're going to celebrate junkies. That's going to be the new, our heroes, our everyday heroes will be the junkies on the streets of Boston. Anyway, let's get back to President Trump's enormously hypocritical declaration, where the president said the following: each and every life is of infinite worth, and we can save these lives. Mr. President, let me just straighten you out here. I know you're a billionaire and you think you're a smart guy and all of that. But the life of an unborn innocent child is of far more worth than a junkie. And you have not lifted one finger to protect one innocent unborn person in this country since you were elected president. But you're falling all over yourself to dole out my money to junkies. Thank you very much, Mr. President. Do you realize the hypocrisy and stupidity of your position? No, you don't. And it's because you're a liberal and you're a Democrat and you always were one. Tell your story, Walking Jack. Get out of here with that. telling me that every life is of infinite worth. How many opioid deaths per day are occurring in America? Does it approach the 2,000 to 5,000 abortions? The 2,000 to 5,000 innocent children that are murdered every day on purpose? Children who never stuck a needle in their arm and never stole from their mom so they could buy heroin or did anything like that. You see, the infinite value of your life can be degraded by your actions. That's what the junkies need to hear. They need to hear that while their life was of infinite value, now that you've robbed and alienated everyone, and you're a worthless junkie who contributes nothing to society, you need to screw your head on straight, you little punk. You don't need my money or my human services, whatever those are. Human services. The declaration, according to Breitbart, allows the federal and state government officials to make temporary appointments of addiction experts. Oh, I see. They're going to hire a bunch of their nephews and cousins and mistresses to be addiction experts to help respond to the crisis. It also allows federal officials to shift funds within current HIV programs to provide addiction treatment. Oh, the homos are going to freak out. You're taking money away from AIDS to get, well, the thing is, the homos have a real soft spot for the junkies for reasons that should be obvious to just about everyone. What else can they do? It also allows the Department of Labor to provide jobs programs to the unemployed, recognizing the impact of unemployment on drug addiction. I think it's the other way around. I think it's drug addiction that affects unemployment because junkies have a hard time holding down a job. And the funny thing about a junkie is if you find him a job, he'll screw it up because he's a junkie. Now, there is a solution to the opioid crisis. And it's not going to be popular, but I'm going to say it. Actually, here on the Weekly Worldview, it probably will be popular. What we need to do is we need to take these people who are either over-prescribing opioids or dealing them in the street and start executing them. And once you start executing the drug dealers, whether they have an MD after their name or whether they're named Pepe in the street or Bill or John or Jeff in the street dealing these pills and the heroin and the fentanyl and all that, start executing them, and then the junkies can't get their junk. They end up in the hospital. I suppose I'm willing to help the junkie in the hospital, all right? I mean, I'm already paying enormous amounts of money to keep the hospitals open for every type of invalid and loser on the planet, so I guess we could let the junkie. And then once the junkies run out of all their junk, well, they'll stop doing it. You know, or they'll die, which some of them will probably die. But that's not on me. That's on them. They're junkies. Anyway, you're such a hypocrite, Donald Trump. Such a hypocrite. Just disgusting. All right, so there's the opioid crisis and a solution right there for you. And it's not that expensive to try and execute drug dealers and pill peddling doctors. It's not that expensive. It's not nearly as expensive as the human services that they're about to dole out to all these junkies. All right. Now, we go from there to another shocking statistic. You know, I didn't do my research to find out how many junkies are overdosing every day. I was going to write that. I have a blank spot on the page because I was going to compare those numbers to the numbers of innocent children who are being murdered. But I think I must have realized that there's no comparison. 1,000 junkies a day could be killing themselves with heroin, and it doesn't match the catastrophic impact of one innocent child murdered at the hands of the state and his mother and father and grandmother and family and friends. The social devastation of child killing is far more, it's of infinitely more value than if every junkie overdosed tomorrow. So I didn't even go and figure out the numbers because, well, there you have it. All right. Or not that I wouldn't help a junkie, by the way. I mean, if a junkie came to me and he wanted my help, I would help. I would help him into treatment if it was a family member of mine, you know, depending on if he had ripped me off or not. I don't want you people to think I'm heartless. But I think it's up to each one of us individually to help our fellow man through problems like addiction. It's not up to the government to kill innocent children on one hand and then give my money to someone so they can shoot up fentanyl or Suboxone or methadone or whatever they're dealing out these days. All right, can I get off that? Let's move to the Social Security Administration, where CNS News reports that for the first time, the Social Security Administration spent over $1 trillion in cash. That's real money, ladies and gentlemen. Fiscal 2017, the Social Security Administration doled out $1 trillion. That's shocking. That's 76% more than the federal government spent on the defense and military. The only major spending category, this is according to CNS News, by the way, the only major spending category that absorbed more money than Social Security, can you guess what it might be? Can you guess who spent more of your and my hard-earned money than Social Security? You got it. The Department of Health and Human Services. Yep, they spent $1.1 trillion on Suboxone, methadone, and other human services. Yeah. So that's $2 trillion it's just unbelievable, the amount. That was shocking to me, that HHS and Social Security are spending $2 trillion. These were supposed to be, these were sold to the people basically this was supposed to be a minor supplement to your retirement. And HHS, well, those were just supposed to be for people in crisis. We're just supposed to be helping the mom who was temporarily displaced. There was a flood. Her and her four dirty-faced children, we were just going to give them enough money to get by so they could stay in a motel for a few weeks. And then, of course, they would get back on their feet. But none of that ever happened. And all these people have been basically, they're now addicted to the welfare that's doled out by the Social Security Administration and the Department of Health and Human Services. And frankly, anyone who ever believed that socialism was just a temporary stopgap, small, tiny little part of the budget, it's not really going to be anything. Anybody who bought into that was just either gullible or just wanted the money and just was willing to do whatever it takes to get it. I never bought into any of that. And I really don't want any, charity from the government. I'm hoping that by the time I need somebody to wipe my bottom, that someone on the planet will do it for me. I just hope so. And if I can't afford to work and feed myself because I become old and decrepit, I just hope I haven't offended and alienated and stolen from everyone so that someone will be around to take care of me. Now, I may not be able to live at my current level of whatever you call it there. You know, might not be as nice as it is right now, but, you know, maybe one of my kids will take care of me when I'm old. I hope so. I'd rather they do it than the government. All right. So what else? Do I have anything else on that? I had this underlined for some reason. The trustees predict that the outlays for the Social Security program. I don't know why I underlined this. I have no idea. Oh, this is supplemental security income. Yes. The Supplemental Security Income Program, do you guys know what that is? Now, Social Security, people always say, well, I paid into it, I want it. I deserve it, I earned that money. Yeah, right. None of us paid in as much as they're about to pay out to us. We all know that. It's a scam. Now, but Supplemental Security Income, that's money that nobody paid in. That's just free money that the government gives to people for being sick or disabled in some way. Or maybe you're an alcoholic or a junkie or you just can't find a job. You're just a general misfit. You apply for SSI and who knows? It's like spin the wheel. You might get a check every month. Well, the trustees of that program project that it will exceed $1 trillion for the first time in fiscal year 2019. So there you have $3 trillion in outright socialism. That's going to be churned right in front of our faces. I think we have a $9 trillion economy. And a third of it is being robbed of us and given to people who it's not that they don't deserve it. That's a part of it. It's that it's bad for them, for the government to get people addicted to welfare. So the government is using a third of our money to destroy our neighbors and maybe our own selves. If we wind up at the end of the road there, just not having prepared. And of course, being addicted to welfare means you may very well not prepare. In fact, that's what's happened over the past, 100 years since they started all that. And so, whatever. All right, so there you have it. That's the state of socialism in America. The government is almost like, the federal government is almost like a fentanyl-dealing doctor, getting as many people hooked as they can to the federal government opiates.
Housemates rub the floors, they get the spaces in between. I wanna live a life like that. I wanna be just like a king. Take my picture by the pool, 'cause I'm the next big thing in Beverly Hills. That's where I
want to be. It is the Weekly Movie, ladies and gentlemen. I am your host, Doug McBurney. I apologize, gentlemen. I have to break in because I have a lot of news left because I've just been ranting. I don't mean to do that, but sometimes I just get ranting. I have to stop before I start repeating myself. I don't even want to go there, but yeah, exactly. Now let's go to the decline and fall file. Here, ladies and gentlemen. Do you ever find yourself doing that? Where you realize that you're telling this person the same story that you and you start thinking, you know what? I'm getting old. I'm ranting and I'm telling them the same thing over and over. They're probably sick of seeing me. I have that happen to me now with some of the younger people, and I apologize up front. It's just that I'm getting old, and my world experience just keeps shrinking as I continue to cut myself off from things in the world that bother me. My focus gets more and more narrow. Until all I can do is remember what happened to me 25 years ago, and I'm going to tell you about it. And if I annoy you, I apologize. So if I end up in a home, maybe you'll come and visit me. I'll try to tell you different stories.
I'll
try. But I may fail. Now, on to the decline and fall file. There's a Silicon Valley startup company called Nurx, N-U-R-X. Yes, it's been dubbed, according to Breitbart, the Uber of birth control. Yes, it delivers birth control drugs like The Ring, Plan B, and Ella directly to teenage girls. Oh, no, they don't say teenage girls. They just say young girls. And it delivers them automatically right to their front door via an app on their smartphone. Nurk's spokesman says, quote, "For many women, safe and timely access to birth control is their most important healthcare need." That's... Are you kidding me? Timely access to birth control is their most important healthcare need? Is that right? That's right. We want to break down unnecessary barriers and give women more control over their own health. Their health. That's right. Mifepristone is now part of your health, young lady. The morning after pill. Let's see. Oh, and they give you sign up through the app. If you're a teenage girl, your mom and dad don't have to know about it. Of course, they're not targeting girls who are under 18 or anything like that. Of course not.
Mom and dad probably provide.
Yeah, that's true. Mom and dad probably sign them up for it. They prescribe you 3 months at a time. You can get your emergency birth control 3 months at a time through the NERCS app, and they want to remind us all that they're HIPAA compliant. They'll keep it all secret. And they encrypt every transaction. It's all very private and kept, yes. And so they don't go into exactly how the pills are. Oh, and it's cheap. They say, we'll help you choose the right brand without breaking the bank. If you have insurance, it's even free or the cost of a very reasonable copay to kill your unborn child the morning after you got drunk and ended up shacking up with some loser. See, there used to be consequences for going out and getting hammered and shacking up with some loser. You end up having his baby and you're chained to him for life. And that discouraged a lot of young women from going out and getting hammered and ending up with some loser. But now as the effects, the consequences are slowly eliminated via technology. We're turning an entire generation of young mothers and fathers into murderers. Because I don't care what any of you people think. Plan B and the morning after pill, those are abortifacient chemicals that kill people. That's what they are. All right. And I suppose if you don't know that, or if you've been brainwashed by your teachers and the ACLU and the executives there at NERCS in Silicon Valley, well, I suppose you don't realize what you're doing. And so that's why there's room for you to be forgiven by God if you'll repent and just admit what's true, okay? Because some of you have been lied to and tricked. But the people who make these pills, the scientists who develop these pills, they knew exactly what they're doing, and that's why they will burn in a specifically, particularly hot portion of hell for all of eternity, and they will deserve that. All right. They don't get into how they deliver the pills. Let's see here. $15 a month. I don't know if they're delivering them by drone or actually by Uber. Pro-life groups claim to be outraged, although all of these children are under 20 weeks old, so I don't see that they have any reason to gripe. I mean, they've already acknowledged that it's okay to murder babies if they're under 20 weeks old, so these are all. But I have a right, okay? Because I don't go in for any of that garbage. All right, Mark Wahlberg. Let's do some Hollywood news. Are you familiar with Mark Wahlberg? I remember Mark Wahlberg as Marky Mark. He was a part of a boy band, a particularly annoying boy band, I think from the 1980s. I couldn't tell you the name of the band, but I remember thinking, Marky Mark, how, please. I mean, you're going to call yourself Marky Mark, but he didn't. He changed his name to Mark Wahlberg. He became an actor. Well, in an interview recently, he said that he asked God to forgive him. Oh, by the way, the article here in PJ Media, they say that Mark Wahlberg is a committed Roman Catholic. Mm-hmm. And he admitted to praying to God for forgiveness for his role in the movie Boogie Nights. Now, I never saw that particular movie, but I remember that movie was a big deal because it was the first movie that they wanted to rate X back when they changed X to NC-17. I remember Boogie Nights was the test case. And it was so filthy and immoral that they were going to rate it X, NC-17. And the producers ameliorated the Family Research Council and Focus on the Family by chopping out some of the most filthy stuff so that it got an R. And I remember that the pro-family industry declared that a victory. Yeah. Anyway, Mark Wahlberg was in that movie. He claims that he asked God for forgiveness. For that movie. Okay, now, it's also noted in this article, by the way, that movie came out in 1997, and it propelled Mark Wahlberg from a silly half-rapping boy band nobody named Marky Mark to an A-list movie star, which he has been ever since. And he continues to be. And I never heard him publicly say that he felt bad about Boogie Nights, but they're saying that... He did an interview with, he was in Chicago to help the Cardinal there with his efforts to bring young people back to the Catholic Church. So he was sitting there with the Cardinal and he said, you know, I asked God to forgive me because Here's how he put it. I made some poor choices in my past. And Boogie Nights is up there at the top of the list, is how Mark Wahlberg. Not exactly a contrition and utter repentance and going into tears and what normally you would see with a very repentant person. And they would also get into another line of work, you know, if they really felt like, you know, I did this thing that I'm ashamed of and now I'm a... Anyway, I would think there would be a bigger... But I guess I can't judge Mr. Wahlberg, perhaps. Has he ever apologized for blinding that Chinese guy that he beat with the 2x4?
Didn't he? I don't
know. Yeah, maybe. I hope he did. Because he did. He beat a guy and blinded him. Now, listen to what the article here at PJ Media says. I find this interesting. The author says, while I'm aware that many professing Christians twist themselves into all kinds of rhetorical and theological pretzels to justify watching movies like Boogie Nights, this movie is out of bounds for the followers of King Jesus, says the author at PJ Media. Really? Is that your standard Boogie Nights? It's not just out of bounds for anyone who follows Jesus. I mean, it's just out of bounds. It's filthy pornography that's destructive and damaging even to the average heathen out there. It's bad. But to even imply that Christian, anyway, I guess that's where we're at. I suppose a lot of Christians went and watched Boogie Nights. After all, it was an R. They chopped out the worst part. But the author at the end of the story here, the author at PJ Media says, I pray that by the power of the Holy Spirit, Mark Wahlberg will continue to grow in his desire to honor and obey God in all areas, not just the making of movies. And so, well, we agree with that. So the author is, yeah. Well, he does point out that it's wrong to be watching Boogie Nights. Mm-hmm. So that's good. I'm so jaded. I have a knee-jerk reaction against everything, and I've got to get over that. I want to thank the author at PJ Media, whoever you were. I appreciate you pointing out that watching Boogie Nights is bad, okay? All right. This article from England, this is from the Birmingham Mail. They say that grooming offenses, and this is adults, convicted of grooming children for, you know what, right, molestation. These type of offenses are on the rise. They're up 64% across England and Wales in just 1 year. And it's one of the most increased recorded offenses over that period. Adults are being, mostly through sting operations, they're being captured as they're trying to prepare young children. Why is that happening? What's the deal with all the obsession with the pedophilia that's exploding? Well, it's because of things like Boogie Nights. It's because of pornography. And this is why pornography should be illegal. Pornographers should be arrested, and upon due conviction, they should be executed in hopes that they will repent and find forgiveness in the living God. But they should be executed anyways. Anyway, they say that grooming offenses in England have increased substantially more than most other crimes, and this shows the need for urgent action. So they realize the need for urgent action, yet they have no idea what to do. They have no idea why it is that adults are molesting children at record levels there in England and everywhere else. They have no idea why. They will never admit that it's the pornography that they've chosen to tolerate and even go watch themselves, right? The judges, the lawyers, the legislators, the governors, the prime ministers, they go and they consume this stuff. So they don't want to admit that that's the problem. But that's the problem. It's the rampant, ubiquitous pornography that our whole civilization is drowning in it, and the children are being victimized. Many of the children are murdered in the womb because pornography leads to an increase in just fornication and adultery and sexual immorality in general. And then the children who survived the abortion holocaust are being molested now at record levels. And it's time to stand up and say, hey, we understand that you recognize there's a problem. How about we do something about it to stop it? How about that? Well, they won't listen to us, but we will be there to pick up the pieces when your civilization cracks up and falls apart. and descends into the Lord of the Flies or Civil War or wherever the hell you people are taking us, we will be there to pick up the pieces for you. Those of us who realize what's going on, have a relationship with the living God who's the author of everything that's right and good and just. And we have a relationship with him. And so he will help us to help you when you wreck it all and destroy yourselves. We'll be there to pick up the pieces. Now, speaking of pieces, this is from I really can't believe this file. Yes, this is another one from London. Police, there was a beating. The two people were suspected of punching a 60-year-old woman in the face during a brawl at a transgender event. So police have made some arrests in this punching of the 60-year-old woman, but they refused to reveal the gender of two people suspected for fear of getting it wrong. They just don't know if it was a boy or a girl who beat the woman, and so they're just not going to say. Scotland Yard. This is Scotland Yard, for crying out loud. One of the most prestigious law enforcement institutions in the history of mankind are apoplectic about releasing the sex of a suspected offender because they're afraid they'll get it wrong and they're concerned about potential backlash. Now, whoever these people are, whatever they are, they pummeled a 60-year-old woman in the face. So is anybody really going to get upset if you get their gender wrong? I wouldn't be upset. But I think the tranny community, they get upset no matter what. So even though these are suspected criminals and lowlifes who beat a woman, Scotland Yard can't say. A third suspect, according to the Telegraph, is a confirmed man. He's about 6 feet tall with brown shoulder-length hair, worn in a ponytail. A ponytail. And that's the one they know what he is, right? Talk about how confusing things have gotten. All right, finally, ladies and gentlemen, Bill O'Reilly is mad at God. He's mad at God over allegations that he is a sex pervert and a lecher and just a generally annoying human being, especially when there's attractive women in the room. Yes, so he was asked the question on, where was he asked this? He was doing an interview, and the interviewer asked, "Are you mad at God?" And O'Reilly said, "You know, I am mad at God." "Oh, am I mad at God?" "Yeah, I'm mad at him." That's what he actually said that. He said, "I wish I had more protection. I wish this stuff didn't happen. I can't explain it to you. Yes, I'm mad at God," said Bill O'Reilly. He says his wealth and fame make him a target, and he's denied the claims for which he has paid near $50 million, all these false allegations that he settled. This comes after the Times reported on the latest, a $32 million settlement reached with one of the women at Fox News. Here's the thing that really gets me. I'm not shocked that Bill O'Reilly is mad at God. Hey, Bill, God's mad at you. Trust me. Okay? So I can understand why you might have some mutual discomfort with the living God of the universe, seeing as he wants to crush your skull for being such a scumbag. But O'Reilly says to his accusers, he says, quote, "Didn't you know my children were going to be punished? And they're innocent." Well, Bill, maybe you should have thought of that before you started crawling all over every attractive woman at Fox News and everywhere else. Did you ever think about your children, Bill, that maybe they were going to be punished for your sins? Well, here we are, Bill. Well, since all these allegations, he's gone on Glenn Beck's show, and Glenn Beck has vouched for O'Reilly. He's a great guy. He's gone on Sean Hannity's show. Sean says Bill's wonderful. And they probably told Bill that it's okay to be mad at God, Bill. It's okay. Well, Bill, it's not okay to be mad at God. What you need to realize, Bill, is that God is mad at you. And do something about that, my friend, before you end up with the whole eternal damnation, hellfire, and all that. All right, that's it. I'm almost out of time. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and AmericanRightToLife.com. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.